So I'm Vera from MCAT Mastery. Welcome to another MCAT Mastery interview. So in these interviews, we talk with MCAT top scorers so that we can see what strategies help them the most on their MCAT journey and how they can inspire you on yours. Even top scorers have struggled with the MCAT, but they managed to increase their scores to competitive level. We want to show you how they did it so you can too. For this interview, I'd like to introduce you to Priya Lekari. Thanks so much for joining us today, Priya.
Thanks for having me, Vera.
Absolutely. So a little bit of a background on Priya. So her MCAT journey was 3 years in the making. She started with a 498 on her diagnostic and then realized that she was struggling since she didn't have a strong foundation in the content, but also had a tendency to overthink the questions. She got a 503 on her first MCAT attempt, then a 505 on her second attempt, before finally finding the strategies that worked for her and scoring an awesome 513 on her third attempt. What a journey. Congrats on the 513, Priya.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been quite a journey.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in this interview, let's talk a little bit more about your journey. So let's dive a little deeper into exactly how you studied, you know, how you schedule your prep, the strategies you use for each section, and a bunch of other stuff. Let's get started. Mm-hmm. All right, Priya, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself so that we can kind of get to know you a little bit before diving more into the MCAT specifically?
Absolutely, yeah. So my name is Priya, and I'm a Canadian pre-med student. I graduated from my undergraduate program in 2021, and I did my degree in nutritional sciences. So this program actually gave me a lot of space to explore different interests. So I did a lot of classes in metabolism, endocrinology, and I also did things like public health. And alongside school, I was involved with various extracurriculars, including being a palliative care volunteer, a crisis responder for the Kids Help Phone, and a few different research projects that later went on to be published.
Wow, that is crazy. You've got so much going on in that time. Wow.
Thank you.
We're going to talk a little bit more how you managed to juggle all of that. But right now, First big question I have for you, I suppose, this is going to be a doozy. But so what inspired you on this path to becoming a doctor?
Yeah, this is a big question. So I grew up in a home where almost everyone was ill in one form or another. So for example, my mother actually has spina bifida and later was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And when my younger sister was born, she had oligodactyly, she had kidney malfunction, and she suffered from failure to thrive. And I know it may sound cliche, but I really did grow up in a hospital and eventually became the primary caregiver to many of my family members. And this translated quite nicely when I got to high school and I realized that what most people would have considered responsibility, I considered passion. And every class and extracurricular since that realization has been to pursue my goal of becoming a physician.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. That's a great motivation, I think, to become a doctor. And I think it's also a gigantic event, you know, that really challenges mm-hmm. you. And I think for any event like that, you have to kind of look inward and see what you're made up of, you know?
And every time was at the end of summer and always when I was in school. I'd be taking a few condensed courses in summer. I'd always be volunteering and I'd couple that with about 4 months of MCAT study. So the time that I got a 513, it was 2021 August. I was taking English and biochemistry in the summer. And, you know, because it was during COVID, I was studying at home and I was doing all of my extracurriculars from the home office. So like everyone else, it was mostly COVID that was, you know, around us. I have to say, I think it hurt just because I like to go out to libraries and study or cafes. I like to switch up my mindset when I'm studying and staying at home can actually be quite difficult for me. You know, I have my dogs, I get distracted very easily. So being outside and being in a dedicated work environment is quite helpful. And not being able to do that, I found to be a challenge.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, at the time, I definitely wasn't trying to write the MCAT or anything, but I was feeling it myself, the, you know, the mm-hmm. struggles of being confined to one place. I think at the very beginning, I was actually kind of thankful for it because I really like staying at home. But then eventually, you know, it just kind of like, I don't know. There's like a burden on you. It's like, oh, I wish I could go outside. You know, it's like, I never wished that I could go outside before, especially at the time I was living on the East Coast of the US. So winter was very mm-hmm. much a real thing. But then suddenly it was like, there's a blizzard outside. And I was like, I wish I could be
outside. Oh my gosh.
There. It was quite a change in personality. But okay, so when you began studying for the MCAT, what was your goal score? How did you come up with that score specifically?
Yeah, so my goal score changed every year that I wrote it. The first time, you know, I just wanted to see how I could do. I kind of wanted to use it as a diagnostic. I don't recommend this, but that's the mindset that I was going in with. So the first time I wanted to break 500. The second time that I wrote it, I wanted a 508. And the third time I wanted a 510 plus with at least 127 in CARS. Because I'm in Canada, a few schools will selectively only look at the CARS score. So I knew that I needed to have a competitive score for that section. And I wanted a 510 or more in that final attempt because I knew that would be a solid score to apply for the schools that I wanted to get into. And it did seem like a doable goal for me at the time.
Got it. I love it that you went about it very logically.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, sometimes, at least for me, sometimes when I kind of have to set a goal for myself, whether it could be, you know, like just a goal in general or something numeric, like a goal score and whatever, sometimes I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to go for this just kind of randomly and, you know, just kind of come up with that with no basis whatsoever. But I like that you went about it kind of logically. So let's talk a little bit more about study schedules. So how did you plan your MCAT study schedule?
So it was actually the same for the 3 years that I wrote the exam. I gave myself 4 months in total, and this included the classes that I was taking in summer, as well as extracurriculars. And I did plan my MCAT study schedule around my other responsibilities, but I would study and do all of my volunteer activities on 6 days and give myself one full day off to avoid burnout. And the time that I just recently took it, when I got the 513, I also plan to do 10 practice exams because I have pretty intense testing anxiety. So I left the last 7 weeks for those tests and I had the first 9 weeks of targeted content review.
Okay, wow. Yeah, that's nice. So you only had one day off. So how long did you keep up with the study schedule for?
Yeah, so this was 4 months in total where I would be busy studying, volunteering, doing all of that stuff for 6 days a week and then one day off. And I kept that up for 16 weeks. This wasn't unlike what I would do in school, you know, with a full course load and work or volunteering. That's typically how it was anyway. So I didn't particularly find this challenging. What I did find challenging was the 8 to 10 hour days that I would have on the 6 days that I would be studying. That got quite challenging. And that's why I wanted to dedicate one specific day a week to taking a break and just allowing myself to just be, to relax, to unwind, so that I could do it again for the next, you know, however many weeks I had left.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just curious, actually, on your day off, you wouldn't do anything MCAT related, right? It would just be like a day of rejuvenation, relaxing. But did you ever find, you know, sometimes like your thoughts would just kind of slowly drift over to thinking about the MCAT? How would you deal with that? That ever happened to you?
So I think at the beginning it did, just because I knew how much content, you know, I still had to cover and I was still tweaking my schedule. So it would creep into my off days. But, you know, by the time I got to week 5, I was like, no, I need to compartmentalize these two parts of my life, because if I allow myself to think about it on my off day, I'm not going to feel rested. So on my off days, I don't think I actually relaxed all that much. I would go out, I would do some sort of, you know, vigorous physical activity like biking or hiking or whatever, just so that I was forced to stop thinking about the exam. And I think that actually helped me out a lot. I just had to shut off my mind and, you know, put studying aside for just that one day. And that's was really helpful. That's how I got myself to, I forced myself to relax. And it was very helpful for me.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I just wanted to ask that in particular, because, you know, that is something that I'm struggling with. Like if I make plans, like if I make a schedule and I tell myself, okay, Vera, you're absolutely not going to think about work or think about anything else like on Sunday. And then you better believe Sunday morning, I wake up, it's the first thing I think about. It's horrible. So I just wanted to kind of scratch your brain about that a little. But I think making yourself busy, like so busy that you're not able to think about anything else, or just like so focused on something else, I think that's something that's really, really helpful. All right. So let's talk about your biggest challenges. What were your biggest challenges? Like, did you have any roadblocks, any struggles that you really experienced throughout your MCAT journey? How did you overcome them?
Yeah, so because I wrote this exam 3 times, I definitely came across my fair share of challenges. specifically, I really struggle with chemistry and physics because I don't believe I have a strong foundation in these classes. So I had to utilize a traditional approach to study this section. So I watched, you know, conceptual videos, and I did basically hundreds of drill questions. And I targeted my study time for this particular section. So the bulk of my content was on the section because I knew it was my weakest. So I just wanted to make sure that I had the skills necessary to do well on the exam. And likewise, cars has always been difficult for me just because it's so easy to overthink and not have, you know, quality practice when building this skill. So this year I expanded how I studied. I watched videos of people going through cars passages. I listened to podcasts doing the same thing. And I actually started reading short news articles because I found it was quite interesting to be able to read, you know, 5 to 7 minute long passages and be able to, you know, strip away all of the fat and get to what the author is trying to say. And that's a skill that I feel like maybe isn't taught. It's kind of intuitive for some people. And I found myself needing to learn it from, you know, the ground up. And as I mentioned, I also have huge testing anxiety. And to quell those fears, I did multiple practice exams to sort of train myself to focus on the test and not the anxiety. Of course, I use third-party resources, and they're not always representative of what you'll find on the actual exam, but I use these specifically to see different passages and concepts, and also to reduce my anxiety with test taking. And this was super helpful for me, and probably one of the best things that I did this year. And I also did my best to target my specific weaknesses. But one other challenge that I was dealing with was burnout and disappointment. So I remember one time I did a practice test and I scored much lower than I was anticipating. And because, you know, this was my third time writing the exam, I was disappointed in myself. And I sort of went into a little bit of a spiral. To overcome these negative and intrusive feelings, I decided to just take the weekend off. So I took off 2 full days and I spent that time with some friends to get my mind off of it. And allowing myself to reset was the kindest and most effective thing I could have done. And it helped me so much because when I came back from the weekend, I felt invigorated and I felt motivated, you know, to do better. So the challenges were, you know, I had my weak points and I overcame them by targeting that and forcing myself. It's always really hard to work on the things that you know you're not good at, but it is very satisfying, you know, once you get to a point where you're able to just master those skills. So, yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And, you know, I think there's so many points that you mentioned there that we can kind of extrapolate on, but I think that would take us like 5 hours. And unfortunately, we don't have that time. But I love that. I love one thing that you mentioned in particular about giving yourself 2 days off to kind of be with your friends mm-hmm. to get your mental health back on track. And I think mm-hmm. that giving yourself that little bit of kindness, you know, like I don't think it matters quite as much like the length of time of giving yourself a break, but it's more like how efficient you are with that time, how kind you are to mm-hmm. yourself. And I think giving yourself a little bit of a break is not something many people do as much as they should be. You know, I think many people, you know, they've got their study scheduled and they're really grinding away at it, but they're not taking care of themselves mentally or mm-hmm. physically. And giving themselves the breaks that they really need. And for me as well, not even talking about the MCAT, but just in life in general, if you're trying to do anything that takes a lot of effort out of you, whether it be mentally, emotionally, or physically, I think giving yourself or knowing when to give yourself a little bit of a break, a little bit of a pause, however you do that, I think that's super, super important. And I don't think it's something people do enough. So I really love that you mentioned that specifically and that it really worked for you.
It did. Yeah. Yeah. Taking that time, forcing myself to, you know, take care of my mental health was a huge, huge point for me in terms of why I think I succeeded this year. I think I definitely neglected that part of my life, the first 2 attempts. And it was reflected in my score. You know, taking those breaks definitely helped bump up that score.
Yeah, exactly. So if someone wants to increase the MCAT score like you did, so what advice would you give them? What were your most effective strategies and methods?
Yeah, so I would actually suggest experimenting with different resources to see what works best for you. My first attempt, I thought that the quote unquote right thing to do was read textbooks and then immediately jump into practice exams. But it turns out I'm a visual and auditory learner. So this year I started watching video lectures. I was listening to MCAT related podcasts and I adjusted my flashcards so that there would be some, you know, nice diagrams that would help me remember. So being in tune with your own learning style goes a long way in terms of increasing your score. And when I did that this year, you know, my score went up by quite a bit. And I think it's because I was just listening to myself and using things that maybe are slightly unconventional, but they worked out great for me.
Perfect. Yeah. I think more and more people are slowly becoming aware that, you know, like different people can have different learning styles, whether you know, learn more visually or whether you can learn by listening, things like that. But it's not being practiced as much as it should be, I think. So sometimes I think many people might not even be aware of what kind of learner they are until even later in life, which is a shame because yeah. I think, you know, knowing that really helps you understand and kind of helps you build the right strategies that you need for learning anything going forward, even if you're no longer in school or no longer in, like, you know, in the academic sphere of a sort. So I think that's a really great advice. So what materials and resources did you use specifically for your MCAT prep? And what are some that you would recommend?
So I actually have an in-depth discussion about both paid and free resources that I used, and I reviewed them on my Instagram page, but it's a very, very long post. So to summarize, the best free resources that I used were Khan Academy, AK Lectures, and Chad's Prep as video lectures. There was also an Anki deck, which are essentially like flashcards, and they were created by Reddit user Miledown. I think there's about 2,000 cards, and it's very easy to add your own. So by the end of my content review, I had about 3,000 cards that I was reviewing daily. Some other free resources I really liked were Jack Weston for CARS practice and the MCAT podcast hosted by Dr. Ryan Gray. And sometimes he'd actually have Jack Weston on and they'd go through CARS passages. So that was really, really helpful. As for paid resources, I primarily depended on the AAMC material, including full-length exams, section banks, and QPACs. And I also really liked UWorld, which has tons of passages and questions with great detailed solutions. And I found an old Princeton review textbook on physics and math from like 2012. So I use that as well. And I also use the Kaplan textbook set to guide my learning. And what I learned from using both paid and free resources is that you don't actually need to break the bank to score well. Some of the best resources I used were completely free. So I would definitely keep that in mind if you're trying to save money, but wanting to still score well. There's tons of options out there.
Perfect. Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of MCAT prep, if you have the budget for it, you know, there's a lot of things you can get that are very pricey. But if you really want to consolidate, if you really want to kind of lower your budget, there's definitely many, many options out there. It's just a matter of finding it, which I think is the huge obstacle, is being, I don't know, like savvy enough to find the right materials, to find the right forums, to be part of the right community, get to those resources to begin with. So how did you come across MCAT Mastery? Did you use any of the MCAT Mastery resources?
Yeah, so I remember I was Googling how to overcome a plateau with my score. And I came across an article by MCAT Mastery, and it was really helpful in adjusting my mindset and preventing me from going into a downward spiral of stress and negative emotions. My favorite MCAT Mastery resource were the emails that I would get every so often, and they would be of interviews of past top scorers with specific tips that they used. And I integrated the little things that they mentioned, and evidently it seemed to really work for me.
I love that. I love that. And I'm super happy to hear, you know, that we were kind of part of your journey and helping you get to that 513. And now,
absolutely.
Now you will be in one of those strategy emails that we're going to send out. How crazy is that, right?
It's crazy.
All right. So let's talk a little bit more about the MCAT in particular. So your highest score, one of your highest score, was a 532 in Psych-Soc. That's crazy. Like, that is crazy. Mm-hmm. So how did you study for Psych-Soc? And do you have any advices for students who are kind of struggling with that section?
Yeah, for Psych-Soc, I found that one quite surprising because it reminded me a lot of the CARS section. You know, it was a lot of reading comprehension. When I wrote the official exam, it seemed so much like CARS that I was like, oh no, am I doing a second CARS section? But overall, how I studied for that was, there's an MCAT tutoring company called MCAT Bros, and they have a 300-page Psych-Soc document that is so comprehensive. And so I would actually read the document and go through Khan Academy video lectures, and I would, you know, annotate the document as I went along. And it's so comprehensive that I actually felt overprepared going into the exam. And when I wrote it, I was like, oh, I definitely feel like I've seen everything before. Nothing was a surprise. So I would recommend that document if you can find it online. It's basically everywhere. I also used UWorld and AAMC materials, you know, to test my knowledge. And I had the Anki deck for active recall. And that was really helpful because PsychSoc has a lot of, you know, theories and terms, definitions that you need to know. So active recall in any capacity is incredible. So yeah, when I was going through the section and I was coming across something that looked like CARS or biochem, I would switch my gears and I would start thinking from a CARS perspective or from like a bio perspective so that I could actually adapt to the passage types. You know, the section is always a bit of a mixed bag, but as long as you have your content covered and a strong understanding of data analysis and the ability to critically review a piece of literature, then you should just be fine.
Awesome. I like that you mentioned that you kind of have a different mode, I would say. So when you encounter like a CARS passage, you get into CARS mode. That's interesting. So what are the differences there?
So with something like CARS, I find that the answer is always in the passage. Whereas for bio or biochem, it's not always intuitive. You know, you do need to have skills outside and then you have to bring that in and then apply those skills. But when you're looking at a CARS passage, the author is telling you what they think. They're telling you what they believe in, and you just need to adapt that thought process. You need to follow along and be able to answer those questions. So in psych, you know, there would be some passages where it seemed like the investigator was telling you what their results were, and the question would be asking what the investigator thought. And it was just like a CARS passage, you know, the author is telling you what they think and the investigator is telling you what they think. And you just have to apply that same sort of, you know, pattern recognition and understanding tone, and which is, you know, different to biochem, where there is only one right answer. Whereas with CARS, you know, sometimes with the answers, you can argue that all of them are correct to some extent. But with CARS, I found that it was like one answer was more right than the others, or, you know, all of the answers were wrong for this reason, and this answer wasn't completely wrong, so that's actually the right answer. So it's a bit of a puzzle, you know, when you enter something that doesn't seem like a CARS passage. When you're entering a PsychSoc passage and all of a sudden you see CARS, you do need to quickly switch your gears and be able to adapt that thought process.
Wow, awesome. This is like the first that I've heard of this, actually. So this has been...
Really?
Yeah, this has been like a really interesting conversation, because now that I'm thinking about this, I'm like, huh, interesting. Okay, so you got a 128 in CARS. So aside from what you've just mentioned, how did you kind of study for CARS, and what other advices do you have for this section?
Yeah, CARS is always a bit difficult because, as I said, it's hard to build up that skill of reading comprehension. But that being said, it's certainly not impossible. And I actually increased my score by 4 points since my last MCAT. And what I did differently was, this is kind of funny, but I read this somewhere. I tried to read each passage as though I was about to give a lecture on it. And it sounds really silly, but it works. When I put myself in that headspace, I was able to quickly find, you know, the thesis of the passage, key evidence to support that statement, and the tone of the author. And if you imagine yourself about to give a lecture, you want to be, you know, as well-versed as you possibly can be. So when you go in with that mindset, you are able to pick out all of that information, and you're so ready to basically apply that to the questions as though you're speaking to an audience. And so aside from that little mind trick, I also expanded what I was reading while I was studying. So like I said, I would find some short articles and do the same thing that I would do for a CARS passage. I would identify the theme, I would find evidence, and I would identify the tone. And once I was able to determine those things, I could come across basically any passage and answer the questions. So this particular trick also helped with questions that, you know, ask you to assume what the author would do or think for a new situation based on the passage. So these questions I found test your ability to take, you know, implied information and apply them to a new problem. And if you're able to find the theme, it's actually much easier to make a reasonable conclusion. And if you're struggling on how to even begin studying for CARS, I suggest listening to the MCAD podcast, you know, hosted by Dr. Ryan Gray. There are a few episodes where Jack Weston will come in and they both read the passage and they answer the questions together. And this is really helpful because it gives you a baseline for how you can approach these passages. And I think the AAMC also recently put out the CARS diagnostic tool. And this is designed to help you understand how the test makers want you to approach the reading comprehension questions. Only two of the passages have full video explanations, but it was very helpful to see how the official makers of the MCAT review their own passages. Yeah, I found this section quite difficult to study for because there are very few third-party resources that are able to replicate the official exam. And so sometimes I would find myself answering third-party questions with the AAMC mindset and get them wrong. And that's okay, because as long as you're getting the AAMC material correct, you're definitely on the right path.
Wow, yeah. I love the little tidbit you mentioned at the beginning about kind of doing a little bit of a role play, I suppose, and pretending you're a lecturer and whatnot. I think, you know, something like that is something that's very small, and depending on you as a person, it might be a bit easier to do than others, but it could be something that's very powerful. I love it. All right. So let's talk about the sciences. So it looks like biochem was your weakest section. You got a 126 mm-hmm. on that. And then on chem-phys, you got a 127. And you did mention that you initially struggled a lot with chem-phys. So do you have advices for students who are struggling with chem-phys and biochem?
Yeah, so chem-phys has historically been my lowest section every time I've written it. So I knew this time I had to redo how I approached this material. So as I mentioned, I found an old 2012 edition of the Princeton Review Physics and Math textbook. And I found this particular book very helpful because with each subject and concept introduced, it came with multiple example questions with full worked out solutions. And this was useful because I was able to see the same type of question from multiple angles, allowing me to answer a question no matter which way it was phrased. So I actually struggle with that in Chem and Phys, where I'm introduced to a concept and I can answer it in one way. But if they were to rephrase a question and ask me to find a different variable, for some reason, I find a lot of difficulty with that. So this time I tried to learn a concept and I tried to solve for every single variable possible. And this allowed me to see the concepts from multiple angles. And that was really, really helpful. And for chemistry, I also really enjoyed video lectures because it's easier to visualize concepts. And for those, I really liked AK Lectures and Chad's Prep, both on YouTube, both wonderful resources. And I also used UWorld consistently for these topics, as well as AAMC section banks and QPACs. The best advice for this section is to do as many practice questions that you can get your hands on and review the solutions in as much detail as possible. This will help with pattern recognition skills, especially, you know, with physics and chemistry, where there's only a finite number of ways that this material can be tested. There's only two types of variables that they'll maybe ask you on for, you know, a given concept. So covering your bases with material is a great first step, but ensuring that you give yourself enough time to test your understanding will dramatically increase your score.
Amazing. Thanks, Priya. I feel like I'm ready to take the MCAT now and do sufficiently well. I mean, well, actually, let me take that back. I won't say that, actually. But so let's talk a little bit more about your MCAT day. So what was your MCAT day like? What were you feeling that day, the morning of the exam? How did you deal with anxiety prior to the test, during the test?
Yeah, so by the time I got to my official testing day, I had done this basically 10 times now because I had written my 10 practice exams in testing conditions. I had a 3 p.m. booking, so I woke up. I went to a little blueberry farm with my family in the morning. I had some lunch that I would have every single time I took an exam. I packed my bag and made sure I had my snacks, energy drinks, documents, and then I headed to the center. And it was a usual check-in process. You know, I put my things in the locker and I started the chem-phys section. I felt really good coming out of that section. It seemed like it played to my strengths as opposed to other years. However, you know, this could possibly be attributed to better studying this year. Unfortunately, I ended up going a little bit over than I usually do during my break. So I had, I think, about 10 seconds to check back in and head to the computer before the car section started. So I was actually very thrown off. And it took me a few moments to catch my breath and focus on the passage in front of me. I was quite stressed that I was losing time, but it did seem like I did fine once I gathered my thoughts. I took a deep breath and then I focused. During my break, I had a protein bar and the rest of my energy drink. And then I headed back in about 15 minutes early and I started the biochem section right away. So this section was a little disappointing for me because I remember feeling like I ran out of time. And I felt like there was more data analysis than some of the practice exams. And, you know, analysis often takes more time. And I felt like I was racing against the clock. And this was unfortunate because there were two passages that I wish I took the time to read in more detail because they were actually very interesting and things that I studied in undergrad. So I wish I had some time to, you know, savor what they were talking about. But unfortunately, I feel like I ran out of time. But when I started psych-soc, I was feeling good. You know, I actually got through all of the questions in about 55 minutes. So I had 40 minutes to review everything and I felt very confident with the section. I remember there was only like four questions that I flagged because I wasn't 100% certain. I ended up finishing about, I think, 30 minutes early and then I headed out. And then when I got home, I Googled the questions because I knew it would bug me until I figured it out. And it seemed like I was on the right track with my answers and I did get a 132. So I'm glad I listened to my gut feeling and, you know, I went with my first choice for those questions.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, wow. What a day. What a day.
Yeah.
I am also someone who struggles with anxiety, not just testing anxieties, but just anxiety in general. Like if I need to go to the grocery store, I have to like psych myself up 30 minutes beforehand. Like, okay, Vera, you're going to go to Target now. It's going to be okay. So honestly, just hearing your journey that day literally makes me anxious like right now. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy that she did manage to catch her breath and did well. Oh no. I can't believe she was losing time during her break. Like, what's going to happen next? Okay. Awesome. I am glad that it worked out. And I think one thing that I would like to mention was you have done so many practice exam prior to this that it didn't feel like something that is so new, you know? And I think it's really great to have that kind of experience that you've done a lot of these practice exams before. So it's not another level of anxiety of the newness of it all. Like that hasn't been kind of added to all of the anxieties you already have to deal with, I suppose. Wow, that was a journey. Like you don't realize it, but I'm literally sitting here. I'm so happy for her right now.
Thank you. Yeah, it was very stressful in the moment, but looking back, it's not so bad.
Exactly, exactly. So if there is somebody studying for the MCAT and is feeling like burned out, you know, burned out, frustrated, sad, along those lines, like, do you have like any advices for them, anything to say to them?
Yeah, I'd say that this is completely normal to feel this way, especially with the MCAT. And the most important thing is to be kind to yourself. This exam tests your ability to retain and apply knowledge, but you know, it also tests your endurance and ability to grow as a learner. So if you're feeling burnt out, that's probably a sign that you should take a break and recover. As pre-meds, it's super easy to get swept up in studying and forget that we're humans that have complex needs. So when I was feeling burnt out, and you know, it was often, I forced myself to get out of the house, get some exercise, remind myself that I'm a person and the MCAT is just one of the things I'm doing in my life. It's not my entire life. And I tried to balance, you know, social activities and exercise into my routine. And that really helped keep my head above water when it was starting to get stressful. And I think you mentioned this, but when I took breaks, sometimes I would feel guilty. But then I remembered that according to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, basic needs like water and sleep, followed by friendship and connection, were integral to me being the best self that I could be. Fostering a healthy mind really helped me stay positive and motivated me throughout this entire process. So just go easy on yourself. It's just an exam and you're going to be fine.
Very well said. Thank you so much, Priya. I think many people, including myself, and I'm not even studying for the MCAT, really need to hear that. I feel like, you know, whenever I talk to people, I'm constantly just trying to gather advices from them. I'm just like, myself. It has nothing to do with the MCAT. It's just for me personally. So talking about your MCAT journey, is there anything you wish you did differently during your prep? Like any regrets at all?
Yeah, this is an interesting question. So the first year that I wrote the exam, I actually paid a company about $3,000 for prep. And, you know, I didn't do well on the exam. So I think that was a regret from the first year. I did what I thought I was expected to do. And I didn't really listen to myself in terms of my own intuition about how I enjoy studying and what skills work for me. So that's a regret from the first year. But this previous year, I actually don't have any regrets and I don't wish that I did anything differently. I took all of the mistakes that I'd made the first few times I wrote the exam and I completely overhauled my system. I prioritized my physical and mental health. I tried to stay social, but I still studied to the point where I was proud of what I had accomplished. Actually, you know what? I do have one regret, and it was waiting so long to open my score, which was 3 months after it was already released. I was so anxious, I couldn't open it. So I waited 3 full months and then I finally opened it.
Wow, that's crazy. Why did you wait for that long? Was it just you couldn't bring yourself to do it?
Yeah, I was so anxious. You know, like the second time that I opened my score, I was expecting, much, much higher than a 505 based on my practice exams and how much I'd studied. So when I opened it, I essentially had a breakdown for a week straight. And I think I was like a little bit stressed out, a little bit traumatized from that experience. So I definitely put opening this for months, which is a long time.
Yeah. You got to rip off the Band-Aid. I went through something similar myself, but it was not for something as life-changing as the MCAT. It was actually me delaying watching this one specific movie.
Really?
It's like such a weird comparison, I know. But it was like the last movie of this really big franchise. I will not name any names or anything specific, so you can use your imagination to fill it in. But it was the last movie of this gigantic franchise, and everyone has seen it. The opening night, whatever, weekend was huge, but I just couldn't cope knowing that this was the last movie and there was not going to be any more. So I waited 6 months before I actually watched it because I couldn't bring myself to emotionally. So I was like, oh, this is the end, guys. But yeah. I get where you're coming from. Nothing is life-changing or, you know, as important as the MCAT. But for me, it was something I needed to delay for my own emotional health or something. I don't know. I was like 12. So who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. That type of closure is hard.
Exactly. So how were you doing while you were waiting for your MCAT score to get back?
So, you know, as I said, I was so anxious, I couldn't open it. But luckily I was taking classes, so I kept my mind off of it for the most part. And I didn't really have any reason to open it anyways, because I figured if I needed to rewrite, I could check it before I had to sign up for the next exam. But if you ask my friends and family, they'll tell you that I was full of stress, and they were always trying to convince me to open it so I could finally put my mind at ease. And I didn't realize this at the time. I thought I was totally zen about it. I was like, yeah, the MCAT doesn't matter. It's fine. It's done. And I thought I wasn't even thinking about it. But if you ask my friends and family, they're like, Priya wouldn't stop talking about the MCAT for the 3 months that the score was out. They were like, she would slip it into conversations. She would talk about it a little bit. And then we would try to convince her to open it, to stop talking about it. But you know, I didn't even see that. I didn't even notice. But so not great. I wasn't doing great while I was waiting for my score.
Understandable. You know, and I love that their perception of what actually happened totally from what you thought was actually happening.
Yeah.
So let us talk a little bit more about the actual day you opened and actually saw your score. What was that day like? What was your reaction like?
Oh my goodness. I was so anxious. I think I checked on December 13th when my score was released back in September. And I was putting up the Christmas tree and I said to my sister, you know what? Let's just go open it. I actually got my sister to log on and see it for me because I was so scared. And when she finally told me, I was like, you have to make sure that you tell me in a very specific way. Don't say the number, just say, you know, good or bad. And if it's good or bad, tell me like very good or like, okay, good. We had this crazy system where she had to use very, very specific words, no numbers, so I wouldn't have a breakdown. But she finally told me, I burst into tears because I was so proud of myself and relieved that my hard work, you know, had translated into a score that I was proud of. And it was a really great day and an awesome moment for me. Yeah, it was a bit of a struggle, a bit of a challenge the first two times I'd written the exam. And so this was a nice way to round out my MCAT experience and to close that book for me, you know?
Absolutely. And again, congratulations on the 513. It's well-deserved, and you definitely deserve to have a gigantic celebration. I'm not sure if you did, but I hope you did. If it was me, I certainly would have thrown like a huge party and just kept mentioning it to every single person I meet, like, you know, cashier at Target. Did you know I got a 513 on the MCAT? Just kindly, you know, slip that in a little bit. Amazing. I definitely feel like it was a long time coming, and I'm glad that you got there. And I'm glad that we were, you know, a little bit part of your journey, I suppose. So what are your plans for the short-term future, for the long-term future? And what are you kind of thinking you'll be in 5 to 10 years from now? I know, huge question.
Well, currently I work as a clinical research coordinator, and I'm having a great time doing that, but I anticipate I'll be starting school hopefully this September. 5 years from now, I hope to be wrapping up medical school and starting residency. And 10 years from now, I hope to be, you know, fully settled as a physician and perhaps doing some side work, maybe as a primary investigator for clinical trials myself. And You know, if you'd asked me this question maybe 3 years ago, I would have a very detailed itinerary of what the next 10, 20 years of my life would look like. But I found that, like, while it's fun to have a life plan, it's also really nice to allow life to follow its natural course. So that rather than comparing it to my strict plans, I can just sit back and enjoy the ride and, you know, feel proud of whatever work I do and not be disappointed that I didn't meet my ridiculous expectations. So I'm just taking it one day at a time.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. And I think, you know, the amazing thing about kind of going with the flow, so to speak, is that sometimes you just stumble upon or you're given an opportunity that you never dreamt of, because it's more amazing than you could have ever imagined it for yourself. And I think that's one of the great things about kind of not having step-by-step, day-by-day concrete plans and just kind of seeing what comes, you know, and going a little bit at a time. Perfect. Amazing. So it looks like that is all we have time for today. Unfortunately, would have loved to spend a little bit more time talking to you and going over everything. But good luck with everything that you have coming up, Priya. It sounds like absolutely amazing time. And thank you for coming on. This was so fun. I got a bunch of great advices for me specifically, but I also hope the listener got a bunch of great advices that they can use on their journey. But thank you for all the listeners as well. Thanks for listening to us. Have a little bit of conversation. We hope Priya's journey has given you some insight and some inspiration to get you to your goal score. And happy studying, everyone. Thanks so much.
Hello there, it's Vera again. Before you go on with your day, I wanted to let you know that we have a lot of free resources, like our free strategy course, checklist, mnemonics, practice material, and a bunch of other stuff. Check them out at mcatmastery.net/free. If you want a bit more personalized help, we have a bunch of awesome top scorers who can help. Check out mcatmastery.net/mentors. We know that the MCAT is difficult and the path to becoming a doctor is a difficult one, but it is entirely achievable. I hope this episode has been an inspiration and has given you some hope for your own journey to your goal MCAT score. Thanks for listening. Remember that every top scorer, every med student, every doctor has made it through this journey, and you can too. You got this.